The following is a breakout session from the 2014 Acts 29 conference in Dallas. Given the interactive nature of breakouts and Q&A, there may be extended periods of silence.
All right, we want to stay as consistent as to our schedule as we can. We are entering into our last session, our last category of session. We're going to be talking about planting churches that plant churches. And we have Paul Whaley with us. Paul Whaley is the lead pastor of Summit Crossing in Alabama. He oversees the preaching and vision at Summit. Paul's a dear friend of mine. He's been in the network for quite some time. He's a godly man. He is a shepherd of shepherds. He's a kind guy. Very, very loving. I think Paul has to be on my top 10 most kindest guys I've ever met. He is a giver to and encourager of men. He is passionate about God's church, gospel communities, which he'll probably share a little bit about today. And he is a joy to be around. Grateful that we can learn from him today. So let's warm it up for Paul Whaley.
Grab this music stand. Thanks, Dwayne. I noticed you didn't discuss the time we played basketball together 5 years ago and the greatest game of my life. I went out in retirement after that. Like I scored all 30 points or something. I don't know. So good to be with you guys. This is so 50 to 100 range. Is that that's correct? So just I want to just dive in. I love the format that we're doing. I want to just dump as much material, if you will, that we've learned, and then leave you time to ask questions. And Dwayne will come back up, maybe ask some questions, and both of us can hopefully give some good answers. Church planting, what a journey. And just a little bit about myself real quick. My name's Paul, married 20 years to Brandy, and we have three kids. And just to For me, my whole life, I've always said God has a tremendous sense of humor, and that's what one aspect I love about our Lord. But my three kids, I have a 16-year-old, a 9-year-old, and now a 2-year-old. And so I say that because the 2-year-old came just as I was turning 40. My wife had just turned 40. We were cruising with a 15-year-old and a 7-year-old at the time, I guess, and I mean, date nights, vacations, we just left the house anytime we wanted to. It was amazing. So I'm just mourning a minute with you. Now it's diapers and baby food and staycations again. So, you know, so it's just been a wild ride for my family. In ministry itself, when I graduated from seminary in 96, I went into youth ministry. I was a youth guy. Thought I'd be in youth ministry my whole life. I want to be that guy who was 80 and still leading students. I mean, that was my dream. And really, that's all the school. You know, when I went to seminary, I took as little theological class as I could and took all the youth ministry classes. And now, you know, God, again, throwing me a curve 11 years ago to plant a church. I'm behind the eight ball trying to grow as quick as I can and learn and listen and all that fun stuff. So when I was serving at a church in Huntsville, Alabama, two other families at the time, we started praying about what would it look like for us to plant a church. God kind of threw that on our radar. Again, out of the clear blue for me, I didn't see it coming, but God just began to open doors, press into my heart, this is something we need to do. And I'm very, in a lot of ways, very jealous for where you are. I know maybe where you're sitting like, man, I wish I was 11 years old and more established and resources. But 11 years ago, we set out to plant Summit Crossing in Huntsville, Alabama. We didn't know of any other church plant to even look at. Now, there might have been some out there. We didn't even know where to turn. I wasn't trained in it. We didn't know what we were doing. Three families felt compelled, led to plant. Didn't even know what we wanted it to look like, except we loved Jesus, we loved the Bible, and we loved community. We loved Acts chapter 2, verse 42 to 47. This was kind of our theme verse. It always has remained for us. This is the picture of what we're going after. Maybe it's near and dear to your heart as well. It says, and they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and to prayers. And all came upon every soul. And many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all, as to any who had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food and with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor upon all the people. And the Lord added to their number day by day for those who were being saved. Really, for about 6 months when the three or four original families, we stepped out to plant this church, we just kind of bathed in this passage for a while. What would it look like for us to do church like this? We've never, the original families, we'd grown up in church. We grew up in an established church, but we really never experienced anything at this level, what Acts 2 was describing. So we were just like, hey, let's live this out for the next 6 months. Before we even think about planting this church, let's actually live it out. And that's kind of where it all began for us. And then when we were, you know, at the point, especially for me, I'd kind of jumped off the cliff. I'd resigned from a full-time paid staff position. My wife was gracious enough to jump with me. The Lord was very kind to us and started sending supporters our way. And so when we decided we're doing this, all 15 to 20 of us, we're like, well, we better start meeting because we got to raise some money, right? So we're like, we got to get a gathering going. And what is it going to look like? And so, again, we didn't even know who to turn to. And so, again, for where you are, I'm so thankful that you have what you have now, resources. Keep drinking it up. Keep learning. Keep listening. And there's some great just ministry leaders, pioneers out there doing it that we can watch and follow. So continue to take advantage of that. But for us, again, I didn't know where to go. So all we knew in the South, the closest thing we knew of a church that was exciting was North Point in Atlanta. So we drove to Atlanta, attended a North Point conference. Our core members came back and said, wow, we're going to be the next North Point church in the South. We can do this. And that's all we knew. And so we came back. We just basically modeled what they were doing creativity-wise, leadership-wise, a lot of Andy Stanley stuff. And that's how we launched the church. That was 11 years ago. Quick story, try to give you a quick snapshot and then get to where I want to just share some things with you because this all ties in. So as we're planting these first two or three years, we were planting more out of what we didn't want to be from our previous church experience, and then we were trying to plant something we thought we wanted to be, but we still didn't know who we were. So we're kind of plowing along, and again, we're watching videos, we're seeing what other churches are doing, and we're trying to model a much weaker, you know, level, not near the quality, obviously. I think the lowest point for us, I'll just get honest, I like being transparent. I think the lowest point for us as a church team, a creative team, because again, we're always trying to do something creative, because for us, it's like, okay, we love Jesus, but we want to be so creative it draws people in that we can kind of give them Jesus. And so we had it kind of backwards. And so we had, I think we were a year, year and a half old, and again, we had some really talented people, even our early team. So we decided we're going to do a message series. We're very topical at the time on parenting. And we'd come up with four different types of series, messages based on that series, that topic. And one of them we were developed on parenting, like the rules for parenting. And we really built it around like a football theme. So for this Sunday, just to give you an example, where we are at this point in our church plant, 2 years old or less, we had our elder wives get their old cheerleading outfits back out from high school, put them on. We made plastic footballs with my message points on the footballs that day. We had our band playing like a halftime show band with drums. And to open the service off, our elder wives came down the aisleway throwing plastic balls into the crowd with our message points. So that was Summit Crossing 2 years old. Now let me fast forward. And I actually have some more stories like that I can share. It's pretty bad. And here's the crazy thing. This is why we have to believe God was in this, because we were still growing. I don't know why people were coming. They weren't really getting the gospel. But boy, they were laughing. We did Lost message series. We built a half a plane, put it in our worship center. It's so bad, y'all. But anyway, so 2 years old, this is where we are. Fast forward, we're about 5 years old now. Again, numbers are growing. People are coming. The one piece, again, I would love to share with, by God's grace, we did some things right, again, all God's grace. And the things we did right were, we kept things very simple in our vision. So we knew we wanted to gather on Sundays, we wanted to be creative, we changed that. But we also wanted to scatter in communities. Now, Acts 2, 42 to 47, I can say that piece we put in place day one, but even that we've grown into. But part of the attraction, I believe, for people coming into Summit was they were coming into a community where they could be known and they could know other people. And that was very attractive for people. So we went from our first year of launching with 20, 25 people, 2 years doing skits and ridiculous mess, to about 5 years, we're about 500 people now. And at the five-year mark, this was in 08, 09, a good friend of mine invited me to go to an Acts 29 boot camp in Seattle, Washington. I'd heard of Acts 29, and we, as an elder team, had been saying, we don't really have a tribe. We most of us came out of a Southern Baptist background, but that really wasn't our tribe at this point. We had a couple of guys come into our elder team that were Presbyterian, so theologically robust, and they were really helping the other rest of us on the elder team to really grow and press into our theology and really growing and being reformed during that season. And so I was like, well, that sounds good. I've heard about it. Let me go check it out. I went just personally as the lead pastor, and this is the part of the story I share with. Basically, I had a what I call a gospel awakening moment for myself. The gospel just truly blew up in my heart during this time, just the different speakers that were sharing on the gospel. At that time, it was kind of a perfect storm in a beautiful way. I started reading Keller, some of these other guys, and just reading all the amazing quotes of, you know, that the gospel is not just the ABCs of Christianity, but the A to Z. I'm like, what? I mean, I've never looked at it through that lens. And so my world was turned upside down in a beautiful way. I came back from this week, this boot camp. It just so happened the timing was perfect. We had an elder retreat planned like a month or so after I got back. I said, guys, we're going to flip what we're doing on this elder retreat. I need to download with you what God's doing in my heart. We got alone, the five of us, we started praying, where are we as a church? And God began to really, for the first time, define who Summit Crossing needed to be based on the gospel. And so we personally, as elders, started growing in what does gospel centrality look like? What does gospel community look like? And so we made a shift in 08. Again, we're 5 years old. We launched in 03. Five-year-old church at this point. Over 500 people coming, loving it in so many ways. Where we were, our people loved their church, but we knew this is not who we are. We've got to shift. And honestly, in a lot of ways, it was like a 180. We went from topical message series to complete expositional book-by-book series. We still took the piece that God blessed us with creativity and some great artists, but we flipped, instead of that being the centerpiece, we tried to figure out, okay, how can this undergird articulate in the gospel? So instead of just trying to do fun stuff to draw people in, let's let the gospel draw people in, but let's find ways we can share stories, maybe use art to articulate the gospel in beautiful, God-glorifying ways. And so we made that flip. And so what was interesting, our people, it didn't even look that different because we were still doing things with excellence, still doing things creatively, but it was just the gospel was the lead instead of creativity. So that was in 08. 09, I started listening to guys like Jeff Vanderstelt, Cesar Kalinowski, some of these other guys. And I'm the kind of guy, if I hear something, I hear someone I really want to get, you know, more information on, I'll track you down. And so I told our missional community pastor, Mark Sellers was his name, I said, listen, this Jeff and Caesar guy, what they're doing, we need to go learn from them. So we got on a plane, flew to, they were speaking at The Verge, a big conference in Austin. They didn't know who we were. We went to their breakout, probably about this size, maybe even a little larger. And afterwards, I stood right by the door. As soon as it was over, I just jetted up, bolted in front of everybody, and say, hey, I need 10, 15 minutes. We're like, who are you? I'm like, it doesn't matter. We need 10 or 15 minutes with you. So we basically took them out to dinner, paid for their meal. Me and Mark just listened. And it was there that our wheels started turning, not just gospel centrality church-wise, but how can we gospel communities? How can we take what we're doing in our community life that at the time our strategy was close small groups, to we also made a shift in 09. Now, so in 08, shifted from topical to expository, and I would say really shifted to gospel center church. And we also shifted 1 year later from close small groups. We had about 30, 35 small groups at the time in 08, to missional communities a year later. We made that transition over the next 12 months. It's still transitioning, but we've turned that corner. And so 4 years later now, I think 2010 is about the end of 10 is when we finally made the final transition pieces and things we did there. So 4 years later, moving from closed to missional, we've grown from 35 to about 90 missional communities meeting throughout our city that are on mission, making disciples, that are making disciples. Now, I share that brief snapshot with you because I want to put that in context now of planting healthy churches. Because one thing that we've had to learn in planting churches is just having the right passion for planting, I don't feel is enough. It requires the right passion with a right priority for that passion, a right process for that passion, if you will. So in other words, when we launched, I knew, again, coming out of a church, I served in two or three different churches, and all the churches I ever served in, church planting was nowhere on the radar for our, it just wasn't part of the vision. It wasn't talked about. In fact, it was more a threat than a vision. So if you heard of church plants or whatever, I just remember the language coming out from the pastor, how are they doing this? Why do we need more churches? That's kind of the culture I grew up in as far as serving in ministry. So when I felt led to plant, it was not really well welcomed. In fact, it was pushed against, actually, from the leadership of our church. They were not that thrilled about it, especially the fact I felt led to plant about 30, 45 minutes away from the church I was planting out of. They felt very threatened. The pastor, honestly, in a lot of ways, had an emotional breakdown. It was some of the most intense meetings I've ever been in, beating a fist, pounding on walls, basically challenging me, my loyalty. To be quite blunt and honest, just to just give you a picture how dark and gloom this moment was, just basically making me recite that he's the pastor, I am not, and just things like that. It was very difficult for me. The beautiful part about that part of the story is our relationship has actually been reconciled over the last few years, so that's crazy grace that God would even heal our relationship. But I share that brief dark moment because I came out of this context like, we are going to plant churches, by golly. We're going to plant churches. We're not going to come out of a vision that we're going to be selfish. We're going to let our people go. We're going to free our people up. And I'm thankful God put that in our heart. The only problem with that, we were so passionate about planting churches in year 1 through 2, we hadn't really thought through what it looks like to plant healthy churches. So for me, as a dream kind of vision cast type leader, I was constantly throwing out to new potential leaders, to people thinking about coming to our church, if I heard anybody have on their radar, I want to plant a church someday, I would try to suck them in. Hey, come hang out with us and we'll plant you. That was kind of my shtick. We love church planting. Come hang, we'll plant you. And looking back on that, like, I'm not even sure. We weren't even sure what we were planting. We were throwing plastic footballs into the crowd. Is that really what we wanted to reproduce? And so, but in my mind, I'm thinking, it's healthy. It's a good passion. It's biblical. It's Acts. That's how the birth of the church blew up, through planting churches, appointing elders. So we're going to do this. And so that's a right passion. But what we've learned is over the last 10 years is a good process to get there. And so I want to share with you just briefly maybe some thinking through what I would call a two-prong approach to planting healthy churches. Think, go ahead and continue to have that vision, that passion. Looking forward, we need to always be thinking about, we need to plant, dream big. But at the same time, what is your process to get there? And what are you going to do in the meantime? Because as I share with you what we've landed on as far as kind of a process to plant out of Summit Crossing. Now, you know, we're at the point where we have training and residency involved in our church. So if you're a church planter and you want to come into our church and learn, we have that environment. But that's even different from if you want to plant out of our church and take a core team and plant either locally or go to another region, we have a process that you will walk through and that we can ensure health. So for us, what we've tried to really determine are what are the right triggers, if you will, for you to get to that healthy place. And for us, that's healthy groups and healthy systems. So right team, right group, right systems. And as you think through this process, I just want to walk through those three, jet through them as quick as I can, and then again at the end, just kind of give you a time to maybe ask questions, and we'll throw some answers back at you. So for us, this right process, once again, it begins with having the right team. which this right team for us in planting a church has to have the right leader. Again, just a quick example. So we're 2 years old. I'm throwing out to everybody that'll listen, come join us. I mean, that's just how I rolled. If you don't have a church, come join us. If you would like to plant a church someday, come hang out. We'll plant you. And I'll never forget, we had a former pastor. And in my mind, he used to be a pastor. He's got to be the real deal. He's got to be amazing. The guy can preach. And so, but he, you know, I never asked why he got fired from his church, but I just knew he was a former pastor. I was like, hey, this guy's awesome. I'm early 30s, just a youth guy, no leadership abilities. And so I pull this guy in and honestly say, hey, okay, here's the deal. Come join us, join our elder team, and then when the time's right, we'll find an area and plant you. And this guy, he trusted me, right? So he's okay. So he jumps in, starts serving in different roles. Great guy, terrible chemistry mix to what we were doing as a church. But we didn't have the confidence and the courage, quite honestly, to have those conversations. We just kind of let it go. And over the next year, he started going through our eldership process. Even we invited him into that. All along, the other four of our elders knew this is not going to really end well. Let's just, hopefully time will take care of itself. And again, lack of courage. So over the next year, he goes through all the hoops. He does everything we ask. He gets to the very end like, man, this guy really did it. I didn't think he'd stick with it. And now he's like asking, okay, what do you think? Can I be an elder? And are y'all going to plant me? And we're like, well, let's have a meeting. So we called a meeting. This guy shows up and we're like, okay, we're still just trying to process where you are. And he asked point blank, well, I don't think you guys like me. I mean, something like just really emotional. I don't feel. A couple of our other elders that were not prepared for his comments kind of popped off, and it got into this heated debate of, you haven't listened. And I'm in the middle thinking, I'm the one that's really screwed all this up. Because as the lead pastor, I probably opened my mouth more than I should early on. The rest of the elders are trying to clean my mess up at this point. And I'm just like, hey, guys, I take ownership in this. And honestly, as a leader, I'll never forget that probably is when I started to actually start growing as a leader, growing in courage, knowing I've got to start having hard conversations. And that was 2 years old, so 8 years ago. I can honestly say I've never been in quite that desperate situation again where I'm going to be more truthful from this point on. So I share that because we have to, again, when we are thinking through planting churches, we can't just throw out promises, come be a staff, come be on intern, come through our elder process until you've had an opportunity to vet him. And so on our teams, when we plant churches, we're looking for the right lead pastor to lead our elder teams, to be the first among equal, which means this guy has to be tested, trained, and vision would be the third piece of that. And so for us, vision, that means he's tasted it, he's digested it, and he's had time to live it. So these aren't guys that are maybe just theologically robust guys. They have seminary degrees, ex-pastors that have the lingo down. And especially, I think this is even more dangerous in our context now in the church planting world. There's so much information out there. You can read two or three books, and it sounds like everybody's on the same page. You start using missional language, gospel language, missional communities. You start using soma language. I mean, there's so many models now. And we're like, hey, this guy's one of us. But we all know that in our particular cities, in our particular context, and how we're executing the vision, it's going to look a little different. Have you had an opportunity for your leader, possibly, that you're looking out to plant churches with, does he have the vision? Has he digested it? Has he tasted it? And has he lived it out? What process do you have in place to train this guy? Through a residency? Through your eldership process? Is it effective? Have you given it time to work itself out? For us, we train elders just quick, and I'm going to try to give you some quick handles what we do. And again, I just want to be careful in doing that because please, please, please don't just take what we're doing and try to replicate it because we're still learning. Most of it's still very screwed up. But I want to share some handles, just give you some principles. So for us, for example, how we do our missional communities, gospel communities, whatever you call them, for us, we have strategically placed throughout our city. So we've got 90 missional communities. We have a map, and we've looked at where they're clustered, where they are geographically, and then we've mapped them into what we call collectives. So we've got 10 collectives of 8 to 10 MCs in a collective. So the way that we start processing potential elders in pipeline is you have to lead a missional community for at least 12 months. We watch how you've shepherded, where's their fruit, is he a healthy leader? And then another pipeline for us would be we have collective leaders, and these are not necessarily elders, they could become elders, but our collective leaders oversee our MC leaders for coaching, for care, for accountability. After a collective leader, some of these collective leaders, they may be collective leaders for years, may always be a collective leader, which would be kind of a deacon level for us, but some of these collective leaders will actually become elders, and those elders oversee the collectives. So we have 2 to 3, 4 shepherding elders, we call them, over our collectives. They're kind of overseeing our collective leaders and MC leaders and just making sure care is happening all the way down. So for us now, we think about planting a church. We're thinking long term. Okay, before we send a guy out, he needs to have walked through those gates of mission community leader, collective leader, elder, and we've given, and that's given us ample time to process, to vet. Does he get the vision? Is he able to shepherd? Is he able to lead a team? And so that's just kind of one of the things that we've landed on. Right leader. The right leader, when you launch a church, you plant a church, needs to have the right elder team. And I know there's a lot of debate on this, you know, not to install elders too quickly. I agree with that. Do you have an outside team of elders that can oversee? But I'm really speaking into the context. If you're going to send people out to plant, again, not just sending a church planter out that feels called to plant 5-6 hours away and you've trained him and he's going and now you're going to kind of be his maybe board of elders for a season until he's raised up to elders. I get that category. I'm primarily focusing in on out of your church as you grow and as you look to plant out of your church, I would encourage you think through right leader with the right team. And so for us, when we launch a church, we have 3 churches within our Summit Crossing family. We've shifted from kind of the campus language to congregational language to we're even shifting. We're just a family of churches is where we're moving. But we want each one of our churches that we launch out, a Summit Crossing church, to have a lead pastor with 2 elders minimum. So 3 elders, plurality. Plurality's been another thing that we've hung on to from day one, and we would not still be here today if we were not leading plurality. I can tell you that. So what does that look like for your team to be tested, trained, and to have digested the vision? Same process for the leader. How are you doing that for the team? And again, think through help in developing this team as you begin thinking through, okay, this collective could become a church plant one day, because again, that's always on our radars. We have these 10 collectives. We're constantly asking the question throughout our city and region, depending on how large your city is, may determine how realistic you really need to launch more gatherings. For us, Huntsville Metro, 250,000 to 300,000, we're trying to process what is a good goal for us to launch gatherings, or do we just focus it on missional communities? So for us, when we think through a collective, is it in an area that someday could be a full-fledged church? In other words, they gather there weekly. They're not just doing missional communities there. They need to be gathering, inviting lost, inviting their neighbors to a gathering that's closer. As we move in that direction, we immediately start thinking, who's the right elder team to lead that? And do we have the right mix of elders? And so in other words, the right gift mix. So we look for, you can use the prophet, priest, king lens, that whole tri-perspectivalism deal. We've looked through that through the years. We've shifted some on how we see that. But you just need to figure out what's a good, healthy gift mix to lead this team. We think through the lens of our elder team. We want strong leaders and strong followers on that team. And what we mean by that, when I say followers, we're not talking about yes men. But we're talking about if everyone's kind of like a high-level leader and they love giving direction, they love just kind of marching orders and here's where we're going. If that's the, you know, the overall team, then you're going to struggle to have executors. So what we look for is not necessarily yes men. We want everybody engaged in where we're going, have input, have a voice. But we want to have men that their bent really is, hey, I love this. I speak into vision direction. But honestly, I trust you. And my bent is systems and structures. Let me help execute and implement. So, and even from a level of on the ground care for our people, let me make sure our people, this is great and all that we have this huge vision. How's this going to love our people on the ground? So you better have people that are grounded and maybe another way to look at it, people that love to keep their feet on the ground and people that love to keep their feet in the air, constantly looking at where we're going, flying over 40,000 foot view versus on the ground. Do you have this? Right leader, right elders, right gift mixes. And as you think through this, the third thing, and we'll talk about this more in a minute, right system in place before you launch a healthy church. So let me just stop here for a moment and make sure that I want to drive this point home. The one thing we've learned in planting churches, before you rush out and plant, make sure that you're healthy as a leader, as an elder team, and as a church. And not only currently are you healthy, but do you have a healthy system in place to ensure ongoing sustainable health for your church? So before you run out and send out and plant and start your first multi-site, have you created an environment that's healthy? And is there enough fruit on the tree that you're ready to reproduce something you believe in? So in other words, don't plant out of, man, good ideas, and we want to be here someday, but let's go ahead and plant now, and they can kind of grow at the same level we are. I would encourage you, think more healthy systems, healthy leader, healthy elders, and let God begin to pull the trigger on when do you need to send your first church plant out. Now, here's the question. And you may be asking, because we constantly ask this question, okay, that's great. We want to be smart. We want to think healthy. We want to have these processes in place. And for us, that's why one reason why we do groups the way we do. It's a great model for us to make disciples. It's simple. We can measure it. We're not complicated. And also, it creates an avenue where once groups are multiplying, it's just a natural rhythm to plant churches out of those groups multiplying. So what do you do in the meantime? You may think, okay, we're a year, 2, 3 years old. We're at 50, 100. We want to plant churches. We can't wait 11 years, Paul, to do this. I would encourage you, this is back to the two-prong approach. So think passion balanced with process. And the second part to what I would call this two-prong approach is get smart in strategic partnerships in the meantime. You can be a part of church planting day one, and I'm sure I'm probably preaching to the choir here, probably most of you are, and maybe the best thing I could do at this point is to encourage you. You are planting churches. And some of the ways that you can do that through strategic partners, day one, have part of your budget set aside to help partner with other church plants. Even when your budget is $80,000 for the first year, which I don't know what your first year budget was. That was about where we came in year one. So we were at $80,000, and in the first year, we helped partner with another church that we heard was planting up in Maine. Now, we didn't send them a whole lot of money. We were barely making it ourselves. But day one, we put into our percentage in the budget, we're going to help plant other churches. So we've helped plant from day one. Now our budget's somewhere around $1.9 million, and that's continued to grow with partnering with other churches. So how could you partner strategically with other churches that are getting started? Instead of year 1 to 3, and again, every context is different. Listen, if you've got the right manpower and you're just a beastly of a leader and you can do this and you already have great fruit on the tree and you're ready to reproduce already what you're seeing, then this may not apply to you. But I would say for the most part, in year 1 to 3, be very careful not to just try to roll out a church plant residency or internship. Think more of partnership instead of focusing in on that system. Focus in on the system of making your church healthy, period, and find a healthy residency you can send guys to. Again, the beauty of where you are, these things are now happening within our regions with Acts 29. Find one within reason, research, email some of your regional directors where say, hey, I need to know where the closest residencies are, closest internships are. Look to partner with some of these systems that are already in place, rather than trying to create that year 1 to 3. It could completely cripple you. And again, I know the notion is, well, we got to plant churches. We need to be training. But again, I would challenge you, your training needs to be more grassroots. Train them to be healthy missional community group leaders. Train them to be healthy shepherds over missional community group leaders. Train them how to multiply MC. So not only just shepherding their group, but have you learned to grow that and multiply it to 2, 3, 4? And that is a sign of a church planter. Rather than getting them into a room for a year and whiteboarding, you know, different intensives, say, here's what it's going to look like. Let them live it out for the first 1 to 3 years. And in the meantime, if you have guys come to you that are already past that point, send them to a residency that's off and running. That, again, we make a pushback on that. You can ask questions. That's my heart on it. That's what we've learned. Quick two-prong approach. What can you do in the meantime? Look at being healthy, and look at good partnerships in the meantime and work on your processes. And God will do the rest. So healthy groups, man, I spent a lot of time on that first point. So let me just give you real quick, here's what we look for in healthy groups. I'm not going to go into detail. I can shoot you my notes later. If you want to email me, paul@summitcrossing.org, paul@summitcrossing.org, I'll shoot you my notes and get this to you. So here's, as we think planting healthy churches, again, for us, we have to have healthy groups. So for us, here's the lens we're constantly looking through. We call these are our five pillars of a healthy group. And we think of this in terms of culture, again, more than just replicate, because even our missional communities, they all look a little different. We have a good framework. We're all operating under the same gospel lens. We have the same gospel identity for us. We're a family of missionary servants living out the gospel on a daily basis with intentionality. But so we look through that lens of family, missionary, and servant, and how are we living out within our context, within our part of the city. So every one of our groups, we're asking them, how are you doing at family? How are you doing at being missionaries? How are you doing at serving the city, growing in Christ, being a disciple? And so for us, our five pillars, instead of kind of say, okay, this is the boxes you got to check, here's the culture we're looking for you to create. First, culture in our groups, we want them to have a team culture. So even in how the groups are led, we're thinking team culture. Are they sharing the load? Are they sharing the facilitating? Do they have someone focused in on the missional side of things and someone focused in on the serving side of things and somebody focused on the family? How are you assigning roles? We want our teams, and we teach them be team led, because if we are learning how to lead in team in groups, that's how we're going to grow healthy churches. So team led. Second, do you have a gospel culture? We're constantly asking the questions within our groups. Are you growing in gospel fluency? Do you have a gospel foundation? Do you notice that your group is finally starting to get honest and transparent? And also, are you noticing that the other people in your group over time are not responding to conflict and problems with self-help experience, but yet they're responding with actually gospel language and gospel fluency? How are you not believing in the gospel in this area? Do you not believe, you know, the four G's, going through that? Just, we teach all those things to our people, and we're starting to see that gospel culture emerge and surface on a much regular basis. Number three, we look for a discipleship culture. Understanding a commitment to life on life living, gospel living leads to life reorienting. So again, for discipleship for us, is it's life on life. It's as you go. It's taking people where they are, growing them in the Lord, and helping them do the same. It's creating disciple makers, not just a disciple. So that's what we're looking at doing through our missional community structure. Four, we're looking for a missional culture. Do our groups have a clear distinction who they're going after? Are they personally witnessing, evangelizing, discipling? How is that overlapping into the group? Are stories being shared? How you're sharing your faith at work? Are you asking your people to pray for you? Is the group coming together and clearly defining, okay, this is where God's put us in this part of the city. How can we bring the light of Christ into this part of the city? Is there a school we can love on? Is there a dark place and, you know, dark neighborhoods we can get in and just bring light into? Is there some light construction we can do? What could we do to bring the gospel to bear in where we're living? Missional culture, get your people talking about it. And then for us, this is God's really, as we continue to grow as a church and God continues to stretch us, this is what I call kind of the fifth wave of this tidal wave I've seen God just kind of rush over our church. This is kind of, for us, fairly, it's not necessarily a new concept, obviously. This goes back years. This is a biblical mandate. But for us as a church, we've tried to become much more of a sending culture, not just church planting locally, but globally. We want to be a church that sends people to the nations. We want to see missional communities go to the nations. We want to see families go to the 1040 window. And so we began just really even thinking through this structure of missional communities. How can we, through the vehicle God's given us, how can our missional communities gain more of information, education, and conviction to go to the nations? So we're looking at just how do we involve, get our people more involved through prayer nights. How can our collectives, this is just kind of a vision piece we've been casting. We want every one of our 10 collectives over the next 12 to 24 months to find, to pray for, to identify, and send out a family from your collective to the nations, and the rest of the collective is actually going to financially support them for 24 months. So we're processing that. We're praying through that. We've already got two or three families praying about where they feel led to go. They're trying to figure out where that is. So we're looking for the right partnership. So for us, if we're going to plant healthy churches, do we have a healthy sending culture? All right, real quick, those are our five pillars. Here's practical steps that we look through in ensuring our groups are growing in these five pillars. One, we ask our groups to do a quarterly review with your group on how you're doing in these areas. Do it over a dinner, do it over a weekend retreat, but take these five pillars and as a missional community of 18 to 20 people, get alone for a night, a weekend, say, okay, let's walk through these. How are we doing in missional culture, sending culture, discipleship culture, team culture? Dude, are you just doing this all? Let us help you. How are we doing it being family? When's the last time we just did a spontaneous meal together? So we ask our groups, don't make it hard. Just make it a fun night. Make it part of your rhythm. We have stolen some of the Soma language. If you're familiar with that, we try to get our people to live in these rhythms of eat, bless, celebrate, listen, something else. Anyway, so we do these rhythms that our missional community pastor could tell you all of them. But we say, okay, eating is a natural rhythm we want you to be living in anyway. Just take one of your meal times and go through these five pillars together. How are you growing in these areas? And if we're doing this intentionally, I'm telling you, church planting will, you will eventually plant healthy churches. You've already set the process up. We ask them to assign roles to ensure health, so we ask them to be pretty specific about that. We ask them to construct a missional plan that they're going to live out together for the next 12 months. What does that look like? And again, this is grace-driven, not missional legalism. We try to even use those terms. We try to help our people. We're not forcing you into a corner, but we want to challenge you. So God's word tells us to go, to obey, to go make disciples. How are you going to do that? And it's so helpful when you begin to whiteboard it out or map it out and construct a missional plan. Some churches call it a covenant. We've just kind of landed on a missional plan, a missional agreement, and run with it. All right. And then finally, so I said write groups, write teams, and then write systems. I'm out of time. I'll email that to you. But basically, just make sure you've got equipping and environments in place, the right triggers in mind for when you plant your first church. This is going to be huge for you. And again, for us, our process helps us determine those triggers. But if you're going to plant a church, what are the triggers to doing that? You know, understanding what that looks like. We tried to plant our first, we were so desperate to get our first church plant out. We were 5 years old. We were already frustrated because we had partnered. Again, we didn't really even learn to celebrate what God was doing through us. We were planting churches, but for us in our mind, until we sent out people from our church, which is I think a healthy tension, we feel like we hadn't really planted a church yet. So we're like, we got to get a church plant out. And so we're 5 years old, and we kind of forced our way into our first church plant through identifying a needed area. We had critical mass in that area, and we had a staff member that we said, hey, would you be willing to lead this? He said, if you're asking me to, I can try. And that was our first shot at planting our first campus. And what we learned very quickly was he didn't really have a passion to lead it. He was qualified but didn't have a passion to really go after that area. He didn't have a vision for that context. We didn't have an elder team around him. Our main campus, our Madison campus, where the majority of our church people are, our elder team tried to oversee that campus as well. I was trying to go back and forth and preach both. So I was preaching five services at our main campus and then a Saturday night service at this other campus. So I was preaching six times, rotating back and forth. I wasn't built for that. We did that for about 6 months and we almost died. And we had probably about 75 to 100 people involved in that church campus. And so we just said, hey, 6 months in, we thought this was it. We even had a storefront. We had painted in the windows, Summit Crossing, Five Points Campus. We had it all laid out. We had renovated the inside. We had bought equipment for it. 6 months later, we jerked the plug. Said, no, this isn't it. We pulled them all back into the main gathering and just focused in on the missional communities. And the cool thing is this was, four or five years ago now. Wow. So we were 50 to 75 people gathering, 75 or so. We've pulled back, focused in on the collective piece, and there's about 150 to 170 people in that area in collectives. They're just gathering back at our main campus, this 20, 25-minute drive. So anyway, it wasn't wise. So I would encourage you, think through, do you have your systems in place, right triggers, figure that out, and go for it. So I've got some other stuff, but I need to stop. So, all right, Dwayne, where you at? There you are.
Yeah, Paul, you've casted a nice vision for these guys. You know, you're 11 years in. They may be a couple years at 55 to 100.
Yeah.
They may not be thinking about church planting. They may be thinking about keeping people.
Yep.
But what you've done is you've cast a vision for groups. And so would you say that missional communities or gospel communities or some type of mission-minded small group is the way to maybe incorporate that DNA right now, even if they're not really ready to plant?
Yeah, I think whatever structure God leads you to, we all have to come to this place when we launch a church. How are you going to make disciples? For us, the vehicle is missional communities. And it's not perfect. There's so many times like, man, we're just not cutting it. We need to create another program. We need to create some training, some classes. But for us, we've really pushed hard on, no, this is our vehicle. How can we make it more efficient for disciple making? So whatever structure God has put in your heart to execute from the aspect of making disciples. So hopefully when you sat through an assessment or you've talked with your team of core team, you've asked the question, how are we going to make disciples? And strategically, how's that going to work? And so as God leads you in that way, I would challenge you, whatever that looks like for you, that's what I would focus in on the first 1, 2, 3 years and making that efficient and as healthy and as fruitful as possible. And let that be the springboard to plant healthy churches. So if it's gospel communities, mission communities, if it's closed groups, if it's Sunday school, whatever God's led you to do, we can debate that later. But do it well and let that be the foundation.
All right. Did you guys get that? All right. So what Paul's talking about is assessing your gospel communities, your missional communities, or your small groups, making those healthy. And then as they cluster or as God does something in a particular area, then maybe think about church planting. Okay.